Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. I'm excited to be joined today by the assistant offensive line coach and graduate assistant at Duke, Coach Nate Leonard. Nate, it's great to have you here on the podcast.
Man, it's great to be on the podcast, man. I really enjoy your stuff and was honored to be asked to be on the podcast. So glad to be here.
Coach, we're going to learn a little bit about your journey into this and how you got your start in coaching. You were a player at UTSA, one of the first classes there signed, and going through to create that program. And, you know, fill us in from there. What have you been doing and what's been the journey into the coaching profession?
Sure. I mean, I think the biggest part of this journey has been the transition from being a player to being a coach. You know, as a player, you see things as a player would see things. You hear things in the locker room. You see things in meetings. You don't necessarily know what goes on behind the scenes. So the transition from being in the spotlight and, you know, the pressure on your shoulders as far as being a student and being a player to actually being a coach and becoming a teacher and becoming a mentor is the biggest adjustment. But my final season at UTSA was 2014, and as you mentioned, I did help start the program. Very proud of that. I was a member of the original 18, which was the 18 guys who signed in 2010 and stuck with the program the entire way. There were only 18 of us that started the program in 2010 and finished the program when our eligibility was up in 2014. So I had a great experience there under Coach Larry Coker, and he is one of the reasons why I wanted to get into coaching along with many others. But my journey started in San Antonio, becoming a Texas high school football coach. And anybody who grows up in the great state of Texas understands that there's one thing that you do on Friday nights, and that's find Friday night lights and go to football games. My story is no different. My parents grew up in Texas, loved the Friday night lights. My mother was a cheerleader in high school and in college. My father played high school football at a very prestigious program in Texas at Temple High School, played in the mid-70s under a very legendary coach by the name of Bob McQueen. And that's a name that a lot of people in Texas know a lot about. And so I grew up in a household where competition was encouraged. I grew up in a household where football was loved, football was worshipped. And that's the way that my life was. You know, people always ask, was your life like Friday Night Lights, the movie or the TV show? Absolutely. It was, and I loved every minute of it. And so growing up in that atmosphere and growing up in a, you know, great schooling system that they have in Texas, you really want to be a part of that for the remainder of your life. I mean, you grow up in that, you love it. It becomes what you are. It becomes what you're about. And so I was no different. So played high school football at McKinney High School in Texas, there in the North Dallas area. Went to UTSA and started that program up, and then, you know, came down to my last years at UTSA, and I was pretty beat up, had gone through a lot of injury, and knew that my time being a player was coming to an end. And so, you know, I had a lot of options out on the table. Some of the local news stations wanted me to get into sports broadcasting, sports journalism, since I'd written a little bit while I was in college, wrote a little bit for the Huffington Post, a little bit for Sports Illustrated. And, you know, all those were intriguing, but coaching and teaching, I just knew that that was my future, and reached out to a lot of the high school coaches in San Antonio. And it came down to, hey, they wanted me on their staff, but it came down to the teaching field. And if anyone knows anything about Texas high school football and coaching in the public school system there, you have to be a highly qualified, certified teacher in the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. And so you have to go through that process. And I was a teacher through UTSA's excellent teaching program that they tie into their curriculum for young people who want to become teachers. And so I had that, but I didn't realize, Coach, I didn't realize how difficult it was going to be to actually get my first opportunity, because just like many other things, these coaches want to hire people with experience, not necessarily playing experience, but coaching experience. Mm-hmm. And so it really became difficult. The more I dove into meeting with these coaches around the area, it became difficult to get my foot in the door. I got a great opportunity to get my foot in the door at a 5A school in the inner city of San Antonio called San Antonio Memorial. They had won, I think it was 2 games in the last 5 seasons. It was a tough, program to get started with, but it was my calling. I knew that's where I needed to be. It was an opportunity for me to get my foot in the door and start teaching at that level, you know. And what I love about this school is it was in San Antonio's inner city. It was in one of the poorest districts in the state. It was a great, great start for me to have an impact on young people. And that's why I got into coaching, was to have an impact on young people and be able to interact with young people. And I loved my time there at San Antonio Memorial. We did win our first game that we had won, and I believe it was back-to-back season. We won 1 game. I was able to be a part of that, and it was a tough start. The school had a 70-yard practice field that was not striped, but it was an excellent way to get those kids to believe in something, and hopefully I had an impact on those kids. They sure had an impact on me. I got called that next year by a coach that I had played for at UT San Antonio. He was the offensive coordinator there my first couple of years at UTSA. His name is Travis Bush. He had gone from UTSA to U of H, Houston, to take over play calling duties there. And then that staff had gotten let go under Levine, and he called me and said, "Hey, man, I'm getting into Texas high school coaching. Come coach for me out at Seguin High School." I said, "Man, what a great opportunity to learn from one of the brightest coaches in the game, a guy that I truly respected." And I took that opportunity, and Seguin is a rural city outside of San Antonio's city limits. Went out there, 5A school, had a great time. Was tight ends coach and assistant offensive line coach. So took a step back from being the head offensive line coach in order to learn as a young coach under some very talented coaches that Coach Bush had put together. Met what I consider my coaching mentor and a man by the name of John Luke, who is currently the offensive line coach at a powerful school in the Austin area called Hutto. Learned from him a lot. Soaked up as much as he would teach me, and got a call to come be the head offensive line coach at a huge 6A powerhouse in San Antonio called San Antonio Reagan. I jumped on that opportunity, and it was a 5-minute commute from my wife and my apartment, and it was a great opportunity to take control of my own room at a big school in a big city. Very powerful program. Coach Lyndon Hamilton at Reagan High School does a great job pulling those kids together, pulling the community together. He gave me an opportunity, didn't know me from Adam, gave me an opportunity, and hopefully I gave it back, in full plus some. And then had some coaches reach out to me that I had played for at UTSA, and they said, "Man, if you're going to get into Division I football, or if you ever want the opportunity to get into Division I football, here's how you do it. You've got to become a GA. You're going to make peanuts for money. You're going to be, making the coffee. You're going to be cleaning the floor. You're going to be, shining the toilets, different things like that." And I said, "But this is the way to do it." They thought that I was a skilled young coach. They certainly had taught me a lot of things about the game. And Samantha and myself, Samantha is my wife. We had no kids at the time, still have no kids. They said, "Man, you're able to do it now. You need to do it. If you're not going to do it now, then you may never be able to do it." So I jumped on the opportunity. I said, "Hey, if y'all have leads or if you can reach out for me, please do, and come back to me with whatever you've got, and I'll look into it further." Had a lot of conversations with my wife about it, and we had decided that this was the direction we wanted to go. You know, if anything had come available, that we would seek it out. And we felt led by, you know, our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ in order to have the strength to do it and to take a massive pay cut. And sure enough, I got a call from one of the coaches that had reached out for me on my behalf and said, "Do you know anything about Duke University?" I said, "Man, are you kidding me? You know, that's big time, Power Five, ACC football, great academics." He said, "Well, I know Coach Cutcliffe very well, and I'm going to give him a call on your behalf." And sure enough, one thing led to another, and I find myself at one of the best programs in college football at Duke University. And that's a little bit of the story. Of course, you take 4 years and condense it into one story, but it was a great journey from the high school teaching and coaching roots to the Power Five ACC football. And, you know, if there's one thing that I've learned throughout the process of doing this, you know, it's got to be that you cannot do this without a support system, and you cannot do this without constantly thanking and leaning on your support system. I have a great support system at home, and my beautiful wife, Sam, who, a short, funny story about that was, I knew that I wanted to date her. I knew that I wanted to marry her, really, from the first time that we had a summer course together. And we ended up going out on our first date. And before I took off from the driveway, I said, I'm going to be a coach. And there's some things that go along with that. There may be moving. There may be long nights, late nights, nights that, you know, you don't see me. Is that something that you would be willing to do? This was before our first date. And she said, "Well, if whoever you end up with loves you truly, then she'll go wherever you go." And I knew that at that moment that I had a winner. And sure enough, a few years later, she marries me, makes that huge mistake. No, I'm just kidding. But we were able to do this journey together. And you have to have a support system. She's been my cheerleader ever since I was playing. And definitely as a coach's wife, she's the best there is. And also have a huge support system in my father, Billy Leonard, who I mentioned earlier, played at Temple High School and ended up playing at Texas Christian University. And, you know, he loves the game. He loves everything about the game, loves coaching. So he and my wife are a huge support system, along with all the other coaches and mentors that I have had along the way. They've really supported me throughout the time. Coaching's not an easy feat to accomplish by any means. Teaching is not an easy feat to accomplish by any means. You know, relating to the generations that have come after me, it's not an easy feat by any means, but all of those people combined create a massive support system that I have to lean on. And that's really why I am able to do what I do, along with my belief in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. And having that within our household and within our support system has allowed me to take this journey.
Well, I think a couple of things as I was listening to you talk, just some takeaways for that for our listeners, especially the young coaches out there. And you already hit on one. You finished up with it, having that support system. And you can't really do it if you don't have that kind of support. This is a tough profession to go through and be a part of if, you know, you don't have that support at home and, you know, you don't have the mentors along the way to help you. So you mentioned that already. And the two other things that really came through to me was, number one, your willingness to move up and down the ladder in some ways in order to learn and in order to be a part of something maybe that is a better opportunity for learning and development. You know, you talked about being the full-time offensive line coach, going to be an assistant offensive line coach. Now you go from, you know, getting paid at the high school level to taking a GA job and being at a great place in a great institution, part of a great organization, football team now. I think that's so important for the young coach to be cognizant of that. Those are the things that you need to do really to be successful in this profession. I mean, we hear the stories all the time, like a Sean McVay, for example, you know, 30 years old becoming a head football coach for the Rams. But honestly, those are few and far between. That for most of us, it's about, you know, learning to learn, learning to coach,
right,
and finding opportunities that best help develop us rather than chasing a title maybe in some place where you're going to stub your toe or fail. You'll learn from it, but you're going to learn the hard way, and you might not have that support system that can accelerate you up the ladder just by being willing to show some patience and essentially some humility.
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the best pieces of advice that I was ever given was, you know, don't worry about the title. Don't worry about where you are. Create an impact where you are and grow where you're planted, and always be a student. I will never walk into a room of offensive line coaches and expect to teach them something that they don't know. Or I will never walk into a room of veteran coaches and expect them to think I know something that they don't know. I mean, I am always going to be a student of this game. I'm 27 years old now. I am a student of the game, considered a young coach, going to be a student of the game. I will be 70 years old and I will be a student of the game. I think it's very important for the young coaches that are listening to this to understand that it's really not how fast you climb the ladder. It's what you do along the way, what you learn along the way, who you associate with along the way, and to always, always, always be humble in any situation that you're in, any situation that you're given. Always be a student of this game, no matter what your title is. I'm sure Sean McVay would say the exact same thing, that he is always learning, always changing, always willing to take on something new if it helps his team grow, if it helps his staff grow, if it helps his players grow and develop. He will always be a student of the game. And that's one thing that I think young coaches get wrapped up with is comparison. You know, this is definitely a world where you want to be the best. You want to look next to the guy, you know, look at the guy next to you and know that you're doing something better than he is or doing something different than he is. However, you can get wrapped up in comparisons and just live in that self-doubt. And I think a lot of young coaches do get wrapped up in comparisons, and they're not willing to step back. They're not willing to take that step back and learn and grow at a spot that may not pay you anything, that may not give you a title for anything. And I think the young coaches that want to grow and climb that ladder the right way need to understand that, number one, it's not overnight. And number two, if you get to the top of that ladder and don't know what you claim to know, it's going to be a quick fall down that ladder. And so if you're never taking opportunities to always become a student and always learn something and always grow your craft and always be able to be flexible and adjust, then it's going to be a very fast fall. It could be a slow climb, but it could be a very, very fast fall. So me being a young coach and having the mentors that I did along the way tell me, hey, you're a student of the game. You're always going to be a student of the game. Don't ever change who you are based upon title or pay. Just learn. Get in a room and learn. I've taken that to heart, and it just so happened that me doing that and me being able to be a student of the game and learn and just dive into the community that I was in and try to shape that community the best way I knew how and really try to grow where I was planted, for whatever reason, you know, it allowed me to take other opportunities. And, you know, it's kind of interesting for me to sit here and say, grow where you're planted. I've been at four different places in 4 years, mm-hmm. You know, and some people would say, well, you're not growing where you're planted. And I would have to disagree with you, because when I throw myself into an opportunity, you can ask anybody I've worked for. I throw myself headfirst into the opportunity. I throw myself headfirst into the community. I commit to where I am everywhere I've been. And it just so happens that it gets noticed if you do it the right way. And it opens up other doors. It opens up other avenues. It has allowed me to go different places has allowed me to grow as a coach. And so, yes, grow where you're planted, and other opportunities may present themselves.
And in you know, your last comments there, you really did hit on the third takeaway, which was about the learning and development. And I 100% agree with you. I can't remember exactly who it was and if we were talking on this podcast or not, but he was talking about, you know, the thing he loves most about this profession. And, you know, sometimes when he's given a clinic talk and out somewhere, that, you know, he can see a guy who's 70 years old sitting in the front row taking notes, you know, and recognize the guy as like a coaching legend in his area, but he's still out there learning. And, you know, for me, I spent 27 years coaching, kind of in a different role now, and you know, helping develop coaches through some of the different things that I'm doing at USA Football. But, you know, in a selfish way, this podcast was really designed to help me to continue learning the game and talking to different people. And honestly, whether it's having someone on who's 5 years into it like yourself or having on a legend, there's something that I take away from every single one of those opportunities. And I think that's the best part about this game, is that fountain of knowledge is never really turned off. It's always available for you. It's really, you know, the guys who just decide to turn it off themselves and that they know everything. And most likely those guys are going to end their career soon, retire. That, you know, I think the best know that you continue to learn in this profession.
Absolutely. Well, and I've got a little story that kind of relates to that. I was in my second year of coaching, had just taken my job at Seguin High School as the tight ends coach and assistant offensive line coach under Travis Bush, who I had mentioned earlier. And we were going to a small clinic at a private school in the San Antonio area. And I knew that it was a small clinic. I knew that not a lot of people would be there. And I never really been to a clinic before. And I just thought it was going to be kind of a casual deal. And, you know, I showed up with Coach Bush and sat down in a small room, like a classroom, and I sat next to Coach Bush, and he had pulled out, you know, all these notes that he had taken from other clinics and on a legal pad, and it, you know, pulled back a new sheet, and I was sitting there with no pen, no paper, and he turns and looks at me, and, you know, he looks at me dead in the eye, and he says, "Anytime you have the ability to take one thing away from a clinic or a speaker, you need to have something to write with and something to write on." And he reached into his bag, grabbed a blank legal pad and a pen and handed it to me. And from that point on, I never go into a meeting or any opportunity to learn without something to write with and something to write on. So that has shaped my career just by that small clinic, where it was like two or three speakers and maybe 10 to 12 coaches. And it changed the way that I looked at coaching, changed the way that I looked at learning from this profession. So there's kind of a little story that goes along with what you just mentioned, as far as being 70 years old, being in the front row, taking notes, never going to an opportunity to learn without something to write with and something to write on.
Absolutely. Because now you have this incredible opportunity to learn from a great staff, to be coaching at, you know, the highest level in college football, really learning a lot about their culture, working with Coach Cutcliffe and then your offensive line coach, Jim Bridge, who is a Cleveland guy. You got to like that about him. But that learning continues. What are your biggest things that you feel have made an impact in being a part of Duke football and learning from these guys?
I think it's just being quiet, you know, and knowing when it's time to talk and when it's time to listen. You know, I had a mentor of mine, like I mentioned earlier, his name's John Luke. He had been a graduate assistant at Baylor, and he said, "Sit in the corner and shut up, you know, and listen." And that's exactly what I've done since I've been here. You know, I go from having my own room at a large 6A high school in the state of Texas to going to Duke University again, taking a step back and being a student and knowing when to talk and when to be quiet and listen to the coaches' work and listen to the coaches' talk about technique and listen to the coaches talk about recruiting. I mean, just being a listener, you will learn way more than opening your mouth, you know, and this is to young coaches everywhere. No matter if you're new on a staff at a small school, new on a staff at a big school, be a listener, you know, and then take notes on what you hear. Like if you hear an older coach or a coach with a lot of experience say something that you think can help you, write it down. Review your notes weekly. You know, I ever since that moment at that clinic where I didn't have anything to write on and anything to write with, you know, I felt exposed. I no longer do that. Any meeting that we have, I go in to it with something to write with, write on. I now have legal pads that I have to label, you know, what year it was, what month it was. I go through so many just because there's things that I hear every single day, every single hour, that as a coach, I can use it to better my craft. And so what do I do with those notepads? Of course, I keep them and I look through them weekly and I say, you know what? I had forgotten that he had said that. I had forgotten that I had learned that. And it just makes you a better coach just to be quiet. Just be quiet. You know, be quiet and listen and always be a student. If you're in a classroom and the teacher's at the front of the classroom and that teacher is talking, you know, you're not going to be talking. You know what I mean? And if that teacher asks you a question, then obviously you answer that question, but know when it's your time to talk, know when it's your time to listen. And as a young coach in a room full of coaches that have way more experience than I do, it has been a great opportunity for me to just shut my mouth and listen and learn.
It's funny, those legal pads, Nate, they're going to start to accumulate. And I know, you know, my wife asked me, why do you have these boxes of notebooks and legal pads? I'm like, I don't know. It's all the notes I've taken over the years. I honestly, you know, I look through them maybe every now and then, but for the most part, they just sit there. I have a hard time letting those go because it is essentially, you know, to me, it's symbolic of all that knowledge I was collecting and trying to learn from and, you know, craft into my own style, methodologies, et cetera.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I'm not in it long enough to have boxes like you mentioned, but they definitely are accumulating. I feel like I'm going to have to buy kind of like a library shelf just to keep up with all of them and label them on the side so I know where I need to pull from.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about your favorite topic. I mean, I asked, you know, what we're going to discuss. You just put down big nasties. So let's talk about the big nasties and coaching that
Absolutely.
Group. And it's something you've been doing now, you know, what, five, 6 years now, coaching the offensive line. It's a big part of what you're doing. So talk to us, Nate, about, first of all, the culture within that unit that you and Coach Bridge are building. You know, certainly you guys are going to be aligned with the culture of the team. But when you look at, you know, any organization, it's going to have all those different individuals and they can be different in the way they do things. And the important thing is that are aligned. So what is it for you guys? What's building that culture of offensive line at Duke?
Being smart, tough guys, plain and simple. We look for guys and we develop our guys that are smart. Obviously, coming to Duke University, these guys have academic rigors that I didn't have going to a state university. They have, you know, we've got doctors, we've got surgeons, we've got engineers, we've got future attorneys, future senators in our room. These guys have got to be smart, and not only for the academic demands of Duke University, but we teach our guys conceptually. We do not teach assignment-based football. We teach our guys the concept of the play as a whole, knowing everything from alignment, assignment, effort, execution, finish, everything that we talk about here at Duke University, to what the running back does, what the receivers do, what the alignment is, why it's that way. Our guys are able to understand the play when it's called, not just say, hey, I got that guy, or I got this gap. And we've got to have guys that are smart, who can understand and apply concepts. Okay. And on top of that, we have got to have guys that can adjust in game, you know, without us being on the field. And of course, every coach is going to say that, but we definitely have to live it, you know, being a lot of the things that we did this year as far as going no huddle and trying to work with our tempo. You know, we've got to have guys that can adjust on the fly when live bullets are flying and are able to make calls, change adjustments, slide protections, listen to the change in the play and be able to adjust from there, all within seconds of time, you know, and smart guys, guys who we don't have to worry about in the classroom, guys we don't have to worry about on the field, guys that we don't have to worry about in our community. That's number one. You've got to be a smart guy. And number two, you have got to be tough. And this is going to go for every offensive lineman in the country. Every offensive line coach is just shaking their head already. You have got to be a tough guy to play in the trenches, you know, and we take so much pride in that. You are going to get hit every single play, and you're hopefully going to be the hammer and not the nail. You are looking for contact. You are one of the few positions in this game and in sports in general who do not touch the ball to score or to advance the football. Your back is to the ball most of the time that you are playing this game. And you are working together with four other guys in order to accomplish one goal, and that's to keep the ball carriers clean and safe and advancing down the field without any statistic of your own. You've got to be completely selfless, willing to put yourself and your body on the line each and every play, each and every game, in order to better those around you. And there's just not many people in this sport or in sports in general who are willing to take on that task of putting the team first and knowing that you have no statistic, you have absolutely no spotlight unless it's a penalty, you know, a hold or a false start or an illegal snap or illegal man downfield. And yet you're willing to work and thrive in the darkness in order to accomplish a team goal. That is a tough guy. It doesn't necessarily mean that you are burying people every single play or you're, you know, trying to pick fight. That is not being a tough guy. What's being a tough guy is knowing that you wake up every morning going to work in order to better those around you in a very thankless job. That is being a tough guy, knowing that you are seeking contact every single snap. Is being a tough guy, knowing that you are going to not feel well when you wake up. You're going to be hardly able to walk. You're going to have bruises. You're going to have lumps. You're going to have bumps. You're going to have surgery scars. You're going to be scarred, and you're going to be hit every single play. That is a tough guy, and not complaining once about it. You know, being seen but not heard. That is being a tough guy. And so we develop smart, tough guys. I know coaches around the country develop tough guys and smart guys as well, but in order to play here at Duke University and to thrive in our system, in this room, you have got to be smart and you better be tough.
Coach, as you take these guys out onto the field, you start working with them daily. What's that individual period look like for you guys? How are you and Coach Bridge preparing these guys for that next game, but also developing that skill throughout the season?
Well, our practices are unlike any other practices around the country, and people who have seen our practices understand that. And it's not just an offensive line mentality. It is a mentality across our entire team. Our transitions between periods are unlike anybody around the country. When that buzzer starts to flash, when the number on the buzzer starts to flash, we are already in transition so that when that next period buzzer sounds, we are already working. Our guys get their conditioning in between the start of practice and the end of practice. And when we work, we go to work. And especially, I can't speak for the other position groups. I can as far as our transition, the way that we do practice. But when we work offensive line play, our individual periods are some of the hardest times of the practice, that when we get into those situations where it's middle drill or it's you know, one-on-one pass pro, or it's group pass pro, or it's team periods, that's the time that our guys can really thrive. They've already been through the tough individual periods, fast transitions, getting rep after rep, and now we're able to get into our middle drill and all those drills I mentioned before as far as our group part of practice. But I will say this, our drills that we do up front have a clear start and a clear finish. They are coached as what we call the 55 here at Duke University. So the average play is 5 seconds. That's one part of the five. The other is alignment, assignment, effort, execution, and finish. And we live by the 55 here at Duke University. And we make sure that we hold our offensive linemen accountable to the 55. Each coach on the staff does an incredible job of holding each coach and player accountable for the 55. And our players will tell you that being able to accomplish that 55 within an individual period is not only a tough task, but it is an exhausting task. And that's exactly the way that we want it to be. Our practices are quick, fast paced. We're not on the field long, but our kids get tired. They get in that mindset of this is what a game is going to be like because they're striving so hard to meet that 55. And then obviously it shows up when we get into a game. You know, we master our alignment. Okay, can we master our assignment? Can we master our effort? Can we master our execution? Can we master our finish? And when we do those things for 5 seconds throughout the course of a game, we have seasons like we did this year. And we go to a bowl game and we have success here in the Power Five and in the ACC. And I hope that that answers your question. When we get out there on that field, we master the 55. We do everything we can to master the 55. And we work tirelessly to make sure that between the whistles of practice, our guys are getting worked in order to become successful on Saturdays.
Nathan, looking at the different drills you do, put you on the spot here. You could pick one. Like,
sure.
This drill has to be in practice every single day. It's a drill that when you guys get to it, it's one that you really love. It excites you more than anything that you guys are doing that drill. What's that one drill that you really feel like this one really makes a difference for our guys?
Getting under the chutes. Getting under the chutes, hands down, that's our drill. That's what we hang our hat on. We get under the chutes. We come off the ball. We get under the chutes. We do our combos under the chutes. We compete under the chutes. The chutes is where it happens for us as offensive linemen, playing with leverage, playing with strength, knowing that we're going to make contact under the chutes, drive our guys out from under the chutes, do combos, work backside combos, frontside combos, single blocks under the chutes. We have a tone that changes when our guys get under those chutes. And so hands down, plain and simple, as an offensive lineman, as an offensive line coach, you've got to embrace and love getting underneath those chutes and coming off the damn football, hitting somebody in the mouth and playing this game and practicing this game the way it's supposed to be played and the way it's supposed to be practiced. And the way that we do that here is getting our ass underneath those chutes.
Coach, now taking that out to game day and the different things you do, what's the call that comes over that headset that you hear, all right, we're running this play now, that you really get excited about because you know that's like the thing your guys do so well. You know it's a great play. You know this is a play that we're gaining yards and we're setting a tone.
Well, I think it's got to be power. I mean, I think everybody can agree, and every offensive line coach, if you don't get excited and your pee doesn't get hot when power's called, then I think you're doing it the wrong way. I mean, I'm up in the box on game days. I'm charting the defenses, charting the stunts, the twists, the blitzes, seeing what's working, seeing what's not working, seeing who is working and seeing who is not working. But man, when that call comes over the headset and it's power, and I know we're going to have down blocks and we're going to have a guy on the front side split wrapping up there and just, you know, busting heads with somebody. I mean, I think that changes my entire mood. You know, and especially when the game is on the line, you want to be that guy up front that gets the call, hey, man, we're running this behind you. You better get that front side double team blown back to that backside backer. You better, as a center, be able to, you know, wall off the backside on the back block, backside tackle. You're protecting the B, and you're alley hinging out to anything that comes off the C gap. And damn it, if you're the pulling guard, you get to skip pull and you get to lead up in the hole and you get to make that play go. I mean, if you're an offensive lineman and that doesn't get you excited, you're in the wrong sport. Go ahead and pack up the shoulder pads. If you're a coach that doesn't get excited to run power, you know, on the goal line in short yardage situations when the game's on the line, just hang up the whistle, brother. I mean, I'll take it from you and I'll use it myself. But man, it just changes the entire mood of the headset when power is called, and it did when I was a player, and obviously it does when I'm a coach. And yeah, we hang our hat on making sure that coaches feel comfortable running the ball behind us up front. And dang, man, if power isn't that play, then I don't know what is.
Nate, as you've progressed up the levels, and you know, had the opportunity to sit down. Maybe it was in your first install meeting where you guys were going over it. You start to pick up really anywhere you go, but especially I think as you move up the levels, you pick up some coaching points that you hadn't thought about before. That, you know, the details. I think that's what I've seen in moving from high school to college was just the difference in details. And I use this example often. My first day at the college level, we had a retired NFL coach come in, and it's Frank Novak from Green Bay Packers, really a guru in special teams play. And I literally left. That was one where I left with three notebooks from the day and a half he spent with us. Not kidding. I filled those up. But I was in charge of the kickoff. And, you know, when I was at the high school level, we had a really good kickoff. The rules are a little bit different. The personnel is different. But the details he gave me on kickoff, it's like I had never coached kickoff before. It's like, wow, this was incredible. Just things I hadn't thought of. So when you're thinking of that, you know, having moved up the levels and maybe the power play is an example, what's a coaching point or two that you've picked up that, you know, something maybe you hadn't thought about before, but really one of those details that makes a difference on the play?
Sure. Well, you know, it's easy when you mention the details. What popped into my head was, I think what makes power go is what you do on the backside of power, to be quite honest. And the reason I say that is because the attention to detail. So when I was playing, one of the things I struggled with as a center, and I was a center at UTSA from 2011 to 2014, the seasons that I was eligible for, I struggled with the back block. And the different things I struggled with on the back block was when I had a tight shade and I would block back, was keeping that guy walled off backside and not allowing him to flow over the top and make the play on the play side. That's one thing that I struggled with. The other thing I struggled with was when I had a three on the backside, or maybe even a four eye, depending on how wide he was playing that backside three, was getting down the line and not knowing if he was going to loop over the top or whether he was going to blow straight up the field, and being quick enough to get back there. Those are some of the things I struggled with on the backside of power as a center. When I got here, it was the first time that I had heard the way that we coach the backside of power. And that is, you have a high block back and you have a low block back. And what that means is the center has the play side shoulder, or the high side shoulder of the down man on the block back. So that is, if we're running power to the right, so that the listeners can visualize it, mm-hmm. and I'm the center and you're looking at a butt shot, okay? The center has the left shoulder, or the play side shoulder of the back block, the defender. Whether that defender is a G, whether that defender is a three, whether that defender is a four eye, you are protecting anything over the top on that back block. That is called the high block back. Then you've got what's called the low block back, which is up to the backside tackle. He has got, again, if you're looking at the butt shot of power, he has got that left, the right shoulder of the down man, which is called the low block back. So he is alley hinging. He's got anything in the B gap, but he really has the low block back. So he is helping out that center if it is a three on the backside. He is helping out that B gap and cloud being cloudy if it is a G on the backside. He's got the low block back, and the center has got the high block back. I've never heard it taught that way until I got here to Duke University, and it makes so much sense to me, and I really wish that I had had that visualization when I was playing, because it would have, you know, taken a lot of the guesswork out of what my responsibility truly was. Okay, do I really have the vertical path on a three to block back, or do I really need to kind of just cloudy it up and see if he goes over the top? You know, what is the true responsibility of my tackle? A lot of coaches say, oh yeah, on the backside you've got, you know, gap hinge or alley hinge, you're protecting the B gap, and then the center you're blocking back. But you know, that leaves it so vague when it comes to this level. You can't say center, you're just blocking back on the first thing past the center, and tackle, you're protecting the B gap and then hinging out to the C. I mean, that's just so vague mm-hmm. when it comes to all the different things that you're going to see at this level. And so saying, hey, center, you've got the high block back. What's the high block back here? You know, well, it's the play side shoulder of the G, or it's the play side shoulder of the three, or it's the play side shoulder of the four high. And then tackle, you've got the low block back. What's the low block back? The low block back. Well, I'm gonna, you know, alley hinge. And what does that mean? Well, I'm gonna, you know, take my gallop step down to the B gap. I'm gonna make sure that my center is able to get the play side shoulder. I've got the backside shoulder of the down man. My eyes are in the B gap. And then if I can, I'm gonna alley hinge back out to the end, or alley hinge back out if it's an odd front to the jack or anything like that. So knowing those details on the backside of power, if you don't get the backside of power cleaned up, I feel like that could really stop power in general. Whether it is the backside shade or the backside three going over the top and meeting mm-hmm. the running back in the hole, or whether it's blowing up the play and not allowing it to get started, or it's the linebacker shooting through the B gap. If you cannot take care of the backside of power and fill that void for the pulling guard, I feel like you're really overlooking one of the beauties of this play, and that's taking care of the backside.
Yeah, I love that visualization. I have not heard it described that way as you're doing it, but I think you go to being able to give your players those details and create a visual for them. I think that's pretty powerful, and I appreciate you sharing that example and detailing that here for us. Well, Coach, to tie things up, one of the last questions I always like to ask our guests, I base it off one of my favorite books, Bill Walsh's Finding the Winning Edge. And I'm sure as a guy who's 5 years into this, this might change for you a little bit over time, but there's those things that you've seen as a player and you've seen now as a coach that help give your guys the winning edge. So if you were to say, what's that one thing that really gives your guys the winning edge, what is that?
It's easy, man. It's creating a genuine relationship with your players. The player coach relationship has got to be the winning edge, and there's so much that goes into it. It's a whole nother podcast series. Yeah. But simply, the player coach relationship creates the winning edge. And if you can get the respect of your players, if you can put your heart and your soul into your players, and your players know that you're doing it for the right reasons and for reasons that have their best interest in mind, those kids are going to do anything that you ask them to do, and they're going to do it 100% of their ability. That has got to be the winning edge, is the player-coach relationship. And then when your players trust your coaches, your players end up, you know, trusting the other coaches. They end up trusting each other. It is a family atmosphere. But the winning edge, in my opinion, is building up the relationship that you have as a coach with your student athletes. That has got to be, hands down, in my opinion, the best part of being a coach, the best part of being a player. And on the best teams that I've ever been associated with, the relationship between players and coaches has been the strongest. It's teams that I have been on that did not have success, where players didn't trust the coaches, players didn't trust other players, coaches didn't trust the players, and coaches did not trust other coaches. So winning edge is this, quite simply, and it's something I picked up in my second year at when I was at Seguin High School under Travis Bush. He's the one who taught this to me, but it's the accountability system on your team. Do your coaches trust your coaches? Do your coaches trust your players? Do your players trust your coaches? And do your players trust your players? It's the four pillars of accountability within your program and building up the relationships within your program. I've lived by that everywhere I've been. The best teams have all those four pillars met and practice them every single day and do it in the right way.
Well, Nate, I appreciate you sharing your journey with us, sharing some of those details you picked up on, just some great stuff here today. It was great to learn from you. For our listeners out there who want to connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
Absolutely, through Twitter. Just follow me at Duke Coach Leo and send me a message. I'd be more than happy to get back with you with further advice.
Coach, best of luck to you and the Blue Devils here in 2019. I really enjoyed talking ball with you here, and thank you for taking the time.
It's been an honor, man, and damn it, run the power, baby.
All right, Coach, you take care.
All right, man, bye-bye.
In the podcast, Coach Leonard mentioned the idea of winning leverage, and we have a great system for that in our contact system, which has been designed by former NFL player and martial arts expert Scott Peters. And he's taken what he's learned in his time in the martial arts, as well as what he's learned in football, to put together a system where you can win leverage on every single play. Check it out at footballdevelopment.com. Go there for our contact system. You can get 3 free videos. We have a new set of videos coming out in late February, which are going to talk specifically about some of the blocks that we mentioned here in the podcast, like a down block, for example, or like a block back from the center. So check it out, footballdevelopment.com. Follow us on our new Twitter handle, at FBDEVCoach. We share some great stuff there every day, great content that you can interact with. And if you're liking the podcast, go over to iTunes and give us a rate, a review. If you don't have a lot of time, just click those 5 stars. We appreciate you listening.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.